Lynx Golf can be a little messy for our heroes.
Did you just soil yourself?
It did sound a little wet, didn't it? Right at the end.
This is an Open Championship Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club, the best course in the Northwest for year-round golf. Book your tee time at langdonfarms.com.
Open Championship Week on Primetime with Isaac and Sue on 1080.
Oh, everyone likes their own brand, don't they? This is magic.
The Fan.
Hey, what it do?
Ahoy!
What's up? Good Tuesday.
I'm offended for my Scottish brethren that we're... That's the only Scottish thing we could find is fat bastard. Who's in charge of that?
What would you put on there?
The rich tradition of the Scots, and we've got fat bastard farting? It's not really becoming of the Open Championship.
No, but it's becoming of our show.
That's true. I guess, yeah. Just saying. You know, say I lived in Scotland. I love my Scots. It just felt that a little, you know... It's a little unbecoming.
Well, like I said,
the Scots.
Answer the question. What would you put on there?
Sean Connery. Where's Sean Connery, huh?
Sean Connery.
Yeah.
Who is the most famous?
The famous?
Who is the famousest Scot?
William Wallace, right?
By the way, Will Ortner in today. Hi, Will.
What's up?
The Fan's most lovable.
Fun fact, by the way,
guy.
William Wallace isn't even the most famous hero from Braveheart.
Oh.
Like in the movie, they make William Wallace out to be the big deal, but Robert the Bruce in Scotland is a bigger deal.
Ooh, Bob the Bruce.
Yeah, well, in the movie, Robert the Bruce betrays William Wallace. Well, that didn't happen. William Wallace was a great freedom fighter, and Braveheart brought him to prominence, but Robert the Bruce is actually the guy that led Scotland to freedom. So in Scotland... unlike the movie, Robert the Bruce, greater than William Wallace.
Yeah, I'm looking at the list of the top 100 most famous Scottish people.
Mm-hmm.
Robert the Bruce is number one.
Yeah.
Well, and again, William Wallace is number five.
Yeah. So Robert the Bruce would be like their, I mean, George Washington, I suppose, right? I was going to say, who led us to freedom? It would be Washington. So he's their George
now,
Washington.
How far past William Wallace do you believe I will have to go before I recognize a name?
Oh, well, you're going to get Mary Queen of Scots, right? You would know her.
I don't see her yet.
No?
Mm-mm. I do see two names that I know, and I'm on number 13.
Well, are we going...
15 is Andy Murray. He's Scottish?
Yeah.
I thought he was from...
Well, he's from Great Britain, but I believe he is of Scottish fame.
I thought he was English.
I don't think so.
We just talked about this the other day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, but we were wrong then, because we were talking about him as like the most famous athlete from England.
Were we doing Brit?
Yes, we were doing English athletes.
Oh. Well, and he may be one of those guys that claims dual. Maybe his parents are from Scotland, but he was born and raised in England. It does get a little weird over there because you have like, you obviously have people that are from England or from Scotland or Wales, and then you have people that are just from the UK. And then a lot of times the Scottish and the Irish,
there's a lot there.
It can get a bit confusing.
Sean Connery, number 20.
Connery number 20, huh?
On the list, yeah.
That's a little surprising. So are we going with like the Mary Queen of Scots, Rob Roy, things like that? As like one through, like, because those are like the heroes of the Scottish past.
All right, well now I'm down on 30 and I know none of these guys. Okay, so let's go back. Robert the Bruce is number one.
Yes.
Followed by Alexander Fleming. He's a biologist and a botanist who discovered penicillin.
That would be a big deal. I also believe if I'm not, because I'm just going back to when I went through like the Scottish museums, I believe old telephone boy.
Yeah.
Alexander Graham Bell would also be Scottish.
He is seventh. Number
getting in seven, huh?
Number three is John Logie Baird. And he was an engineer and inventor who demonstrated the first televised moving objects and later color TV.
Hmm. Can't say I knew that.
David Hume is fourth. He was an economist, diplomat, and influential Enlightenment philosopher. That's like me.
Mm, clearly.
He promoted a radical philosophical empiricism. Mm. That's pretty vague.
Not familiar with him.
William Wallace, five. Alex Salmond is sixth. He's leader of the Scottish National Party. He was instrumental in the growth of the SNP during the 80s, 90s, and 2000s.
Sure.
So he's one of the more recent. Then you have Alexander Graham Bell. And the only other name that I recognize here is number 13, and that is the great J.K. Rowling.
Yes!
And we all know her.
Well, now lately you got what? Ewan McGregor is Scottish.
So she was born in England, but moved to Scotland.
Moved to Scotland.
And she wrote Harry Potter.
Yeah. And now everyone hates her because, well, some people hate her. She said some controversial things, so everyone was like, boo.
So there you go.
All right. Well, there's my Scots.
So you would put on there.
Well, I just found the fat bastard thing a little, like, we're doing Mike.
It's a little cliche.
Well, we're doing Mike Meyer, and Mike Meyer's family is Scottish. Like, he's doing, like, an impression of his dad, haha. But I felt a little disrespectful. As a man that loves the Scots, and one of my favorite places that I've ever lived, might be the second favorite place I've ever lived.
Besides what? Vancouver, Washington?
Well, besides here, I love the Pacific Northwest. Oh. It's a great place to be from. Big fan. But Scotland was amazing.
What if...
Like, if you could... If all things were equal and I had to move somewhere else and, you know, job and all that stuff, I could easily go back to Scotland and live there. Scotland and Ireland are amazing places.
What if there is a radio show over there in Scotland, and they're like you and I, and they play a bunch of farts and stuff, but they're Scottish, and for the U.S. Open, they do promos like we do for the Open Championship.
See, like, if they were doing, like, guns, truck, beer, flags,
but who would be the cliche character?
Kid Rock, probably. Or Trump, one of the two. I mean, that's very, very
American. So they use fat bastard.
Uh-huh.
Or, I mean, we use fat bastard. And they use...
They would use, like, Kid Rock or Duck Dynasty moron. Yeah. Be something like that. Hmm. It'd be someone with a southern accent, and, you know, they'd be doing that. It'd be something about guns and maybe Jesus or something. You know, and then we'd be like, that's ridiculous. But we do it to the Scots, and we're like, ha-ha, fat bastard. I'm just saying. Fat bastard should not be the representative when we think of Royal Troon and the British Open.
The text line is claiming it's somebody else. It's not fat bastard.
What?
That is? Literally, that's line? Fat bastard. The guy who's saying the your own brand.
I don't know, dude. There's a bunch of texts coming in saying it's Charlie's dad from So I Married an Axe Murderer. I don't know what to tell you.
When he's talking about smelling your own brand, that's fat bastard who farts.
I wasn't listening.
Well, that's fat bastard.
I don't know.
Now, Charlie's dad from So I Married an Axe Murderer, I think, is in there, too, because Mike Myers does the Scottish thing, but I promise you, the guy that's farting in there and talking about smelling his own brand, that's not Charlie's dad from So I Married an Axe Murderer.
You promise?
Yes. That's fat bastard.
Okay.
Because So I Married an Axe Murderer, his dad in that movie, that is fantastic. That's good times.
I'm now on
that's
a...
That's the hit move now!
I'm on a... I'm in a Google Vortex now. I'm trying to come up with the most stereotypical American characters in pop culture.
I like where you're going with that.
Because I don't think it's Kid Rock. I don't think it's Trump. Although Trump's probably going to be pretty... he would be up there.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like I'm missing somebody.
Mm.
Like a famous American... Like, is it like somebody like Rocky? Or
that's pretty good. Like
somebody from the movie?
Like a Hulk Hogan sort of thing.
Something like that.
Well, I'll see if I can find this and send it to you. The greatest Scotland clip of all time is it's a news clip, and it's made its way around the internet. It's a kid, and he's like maybe in his 20s, and he's talking about how he's at a bar, and he's looking at a guy, and now they're getting ready to fight just by looking at each other. And then he's like, wait a minute. I'm looking at him. He's looking at me, and I'm thinking, are you my dad? And then they have a moment where they think they're father and son. And then they talk it out, and they find out they're not father and son. So he goes, I headbutted him, and I walked away. And I was like, God bless Scott. That's the sort of thing that just, there's something about the Scottish experience when you go to a bar that's amazing. Where you just, I don't know, just the weird, the weird, surly, blue-collar nature of it is just wonderful. It's such a great clip. And then it turns out, he wasn't my dad or anything, so I just headbutted him and I got out of there.
Don't you think maybe a cowboy would be...
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, who's the most stereotypical American cowboy?
John Wayne. Yeah. You'd have a howdy partner.
Right.
You'd do something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably the closest to Fat Bastard.
Yeah, you'd have that. You'd have a... Yeah, someone's saying there's a good one. Sean Penn from Fast Times doing a Spicoli if you wanted to be the stoner Californian.
Yeah, there you go.
Or you wanted to do, you know, John Wayne. But we're a little harder because...
What about, like, Yellowstone? Is Yellowstone big over there?
I don't know if it's big, but yeah, a Dutton thing. Well, we're diverse, so America, you can get a lot of dumb stereotypes, whereas the other countries, you kind of focus in on one. We're just so broad. But when we went over there, when I was living in Scotland... The guy that I bummed around with, his name was Kenny, and he played at the University of Arkansas and then with the Vikings, and he's from Fayetteville, or no, Bentonville, Arkansas. And Kenny got himself a draw kind of like this, and he talked real slow and real Southern, and the Scots talked very fast. So Kenny was always having to ask them to repeat themselves many, many times over, and I hate to do it, but they... And Kenny was a really, really big guy, but he was a very sweet, gentle man. And they all thought Kenny was, they thought Kenny was special.
Oh.
There's one time we were at this bar and someone pulled me aside and they were talking how neat it was that, American football allowed, challenged people to play. They really thought that we were taking large, mentally challenged people, and then we're putting them out on the football field.
Dude, if someone who is challenged in one way or another could play football really well at a high level, believe me, they'd be playing.
We'd run them out there.
They'd get a hell of a contract.
Yeah.
People don't care.
Multiple people thought that there was something, just because he was just, everything he did was very slow and deliberate, and he could never understand them, and... Just the way he talked, that used to crack me up every time it happened.
I have very much
cultural differences. Speaking the same language, very, very different, though.
I have the five types of Americans portrayed on British television.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they are looking past the monolithic trope that is the American idiot.
Sure.
Okay, that would be your Spicoli.
Yeah.
Although the first on the list here is the Valley Girl.
Well, that's just the female version of Spicoli.
Yeah.
So...
But that's a big one. The cowboy is on here.
Yeah.
The new money.
New money.
So yeah, because, you know, we're young over here.
Okay.
Comparatively.
Yeah.
Right?
All right. Well, I mean, so it's like, I guess new money is anything within like 100 years. So like some family that made their money in like 1840, they're like, new money. Because theirs goes back a wee bit further than ours.
And then they have the operative.
The operative. Like a spy?
Yeah, like it says, they may not be the main villain, but they're the player. They are players in the game, if not as members of the actual CIA covert ops.
Hmm.
The American operative is often threatening, but not always frightening.
Hmm. Hmm. Interesting. I wouldn't have necessarily gotten that one.
So there you go.
All right. Well, yeah. I mean, we all have stereotypes.
Oh, I missed one. The playboy / playgirl.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I found that when. And, you know, I was in Scotland, obviously, years and years ago, but I try to travel a bunch. I like going to see different cultures. And the two things that I always get about the United States, no matter where I go, is everyone's rich.
Yeah.
And everyone has guns. Those are the two.
We're all rich, right, Will?
We're all rich.
Well, yeah, dude, I just put in a moat.
Well, to a lot of those people.
Will is rich.
Yeah. And they don't necessarily understand that our cost of living is... significantly more.
Oh, yeah.
So they think that everyone's loaded because everything they see is Instagram. So they just see everyone's big SUVs. And by the way, driving an SUV in a lot of those places is the definition of being rich because everyone over there drives little tiny fuel-efficient cars. Gas is, you know, $14 a gallon, even though it's in liters. And then the guns thing. Everyone literally thinks that no matter where you go, like, everyone's got a gun strapped to their leg. And you can get,
you can get shot anywhere.
And you can get shot anywhere.
But not everyone has a gun.
Yes. Yeah.
I know I don't.
And so having to explain to them that it's not like, they're like, wow, are you worried every time you go on the street? You're like, no. It's like, you can go out to bars, you walk around, and like, you won't get shot. And then I'm like, well, I mean, for the most part, you're not going to get shot. But yeah, they just think it's like the OK Corral. Because we very much project. When you're the only one in the world that does something, it's odd. And we are the only ones that, you know, pew, pew, pew.
I can totally see where that comes from. But yet, living here, I don't feel in danger.
No, not at all.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is probably weird to them.
Mm-hmm.
but
yeah, because to them, it seems like it's the most terrifying thing in the world, walking around knowing that. And by the way, you know what happened over the weekend ain't going to help our public perception. You know, we're just that's our stereotype. And you know what? Stereotypes can be bad, but also stereotypes can be earned. And let's be honest, we earned that. That one's on us.
Vancouver for text line. Just got back from Portugal beers with €3. I felt rich.
Yeah, yeah. There's an element to that.
Yeah, I was talking to, we've got some friends in town. They live in Philly, but they used to live in New Hampshire, and they said there's a lot of people from overseas, like Europe and in, you know, upper part of the U.S. over there, you know, way over there. And they said that a lot of them, they come over because, you know, the whole American dream thing, upward mobility in a company, like you go over there and you work and there's not as much room for advancement.
No.
Here, you know, they come over here. It's like, it's going to be great. We have everything we have over there. And then we have upward mobility and the American dream and the whole thing. But what they don't understand about living here are costs of like healthcare. Yep. Child care.
A lot of places your basic needs are covered, but your salary kind of stays flat. So
it's busy. Yeah. You know, you could get shot on any corner.
When we were in,
it's a trade-off.
Yeah. When we were in St. Lucia, a little bit ago, like that's not that far, you know, from Florida. So a lot of the people, everyone that we met had been to two. If they had been to the United States, they'd been to two places. They flew to Florida, they flew to Miami, or they flew to New York. That's it. Those are the two places. And no one tried going to New York. New York was just like a vacation, and New York was just overwhelming. But we met a lot of people that thought Florida. They immigrated to Florida, and they all moved back because there you can make most people there either, you know, drive a cab or do something in the tourism industry, and you don't make a lot of money, but you live. And what they found was going to Florida, they were making all this money and they were worse off than they were when they were back on the island.
Yeah.
So we ran into so many people that were like, I was in Florida for a year or 2 years and my life was way worse. And so and I couldn't afford to go anywhere else in the United States. So I just came back to the island, and it's simpler. And, you know, it was weird that sometimes that dream of coming to the U.S., at least for them, ended up kind of being a dead end for a lot of those people.
Well, Florida, it's probably unfair, but I feel like everyone there is a crook.
You land in Miami and that's all you know of the United States.
Well, Florida is it just feels like everyone there is trying to rip you off. I don't know what it is about Florida. It's just a very untrustworthy place.
Well, I was trying to explain to them, like, if all you know is Florida, try explaining to someone that's been on an island, you can drive around the whole island in 2 hours, and then try to explain to them the size of the United States and where I'm from.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
The rest of the U.S.
It doesn't equate. And then, like, where you're born, I was like, Alaska, and that's a whole other, you know.
Alaska?
Yeah, you might as well be from the North, you know, from the North Pole. Yeah, it's a whole thing, so.
Tell them there's snow there.
But it's interesting to, like, that's one of the great parts about traveling is you get to see the different perceptions of how people view us versus how we view, you know.
Well, apparently whoever does our promos views Scotland through the eyes of Fat Bastard.
Yeah, and I thought it was a little cheap, to be honest with you.
And Sook didn't like it.
It's probably swag, and now he's going to be all pissy and be
it's
like.
It's either swag or Buckley.
I'm waiting for swag to send.
It's not Buckley.
It's not, yeah. So
it's swag.
I'm waiting for swag to send me the email that's going to say, well, then you do it. You know that's
coming. Yeah, why don't you do it?
Yeah, that's, you know.
Bitch.
That's coming.
You going to do it?
No. But I'll make the suggestion on some Scots that we can use besides Fat Bastard.
Well, it's a big Tuesday show. Yeah. I don't know if you guys know that. It's All-Star Game Night.
Yes. The Skeener.
I would say I'm excited, but I'm not.
You
know, never
like
him.
No, I like the All-Star Game.
I lie. It's fine. But it's, okay. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's usually, what, 3-2 or something? It's like the same game every year, I think.
I wish that they would keep the starters in for longer, because by the time, no offense to baseball, but you have a star problem, and that a lot of the guys that are there, and I think there's like 32 new timers. So when the game does get interesting, all the guys that are household names, the Bryce Harpers, the Aaron Judges of the world, scheme, they're all gone. And you end up with a bunch of dudes that most of the country haven't heard of. You're like, who the hell is this guy? It would be more interesting if the also-ran started the All-Star game, and then we put the big boys in from like the fifth on. So when we got down to the end, imagine if the final at bat, you know, a World Baseball Classic, you know, sort of scenario was Skeens in the ninth versus Aaron Judge.
Ooh.
Now we're talking. Now we got Ohtani. Now we got Trout. World Baseball Classic, let's go. But that won't be the case. You could have Munez in there. And, you know, for anyone that's not from Seattle, like, who the hell is this guy? He's only in there because Gilbert's not going to pitch. And then he's going to be throwing to, I don't know, someone from the Cincinnati Reds that you've never heard of. And you're like, okay.
Well, I'll watch. Well, of course, I'll be doing a radio show, too.
Well, but the game will be, the game's at 5. It'll still be going on when we're done.
Again, I'll tune in. I may bet the under just to have some action.
There you go.
13-4 unders the last 17 All-Star games.
Should have bet on Mariner great, Teoscar Hernandez.
Yeah, like, I mean, home run derby, that's a crapshoot. Although I thought Bobby Witt should have won it. I think his pitcher effed him.
He needed a few more push-ups there at the end. He had that warning track power, needed just one more oof.
Yeah, he had a pitcher that was kind of all over the place, but he did great considering. All right, let's go. You ready to go?
Let's go.
Ortner's here. I don't know where Buck is. I think he's home babysitting his stupid kids.
Yeah, his wife's out of town, allegedly, which means Buck, I don't know.
Whatever.
He's got daycare issues.
When was the last time the Georgia football coach was jealous of Oregon?
Boy, I'm going to say never.
Complete with audio. 320 on the Fan.
This is an Open Championship Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, what's up? Tuesday show, Rob Bisacci. Big Sooks right over there. We got Will Ortner. Thank God. Got rid of Buck finally.
Mm-hmm. Buck's at home on, quote, kid duty.
What do you suppose he's doing right now?
Laying around in his underwear, probably with his kid in his underwear.
Do you think he's playing college football video game?
Well, that's a good chance. I don't know if he bought it yet, but either that or he's going over gambling lines for the Open.
He's placing all-star game bets.
Well, I got to say this, and I'm saying it to Dirt. I'm saying it to Buck. Uh-oh. I'm saying it to everyone out there.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
Can we please get over this? Parenthood is the hardest thing in the world. It's an effing scam, all right? I get it. It's challenging. Guess who's raised kids? Everybody. Forever. It's not the hardest thing in the world, all right? I raised 3 kids. I had a sick wife. I did it a lot of it on my own. And then after she passed, I did it all on my own. Was it hard? Yeah, but you make it harder than it has to be. Kids aren't these, like, things that need 24/7 helicopter attention. It's just not. So this idea of, like, they do the hardest job ever, being a parent. No, that is not the hardest job ever. It is not. So just, I'm saying that once and for all. I'm tired of people trying to use the parenting excuse for why they can't do anything else.
Well, who is using that?
Everybody.
So you said
gets thrown
dirt.
Out all the time.
So you're calling out Dirt and Buckley?
No, it's just like people. It's actually not Dirt. Dirt is actually pretty honest about it, but people are always like, do you have time to, can you find time to play a video game? It's 24 hours in a day. I'm sure Dirt can squeeze in a half hour to play EA football from time to time. We act like being a parent literally is a 24/7 responsibility. Yeah, you may be on 24/7, but a lot of that's like being on NORAD missile watch. Yeah, you're on the job. There's not missiles coming in at any given moment, all right? So we just need to kind of, I know it's like an unpopular thing to say because everyone loves to bow up about being a parent. You know, it's just, you were a parent. You were a step parent. Was it the hardest thing you've ever done?
Well, Jason, I will tell you, I was a great one. to also pat myself on the back. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it's more that kids, they're just time consuming, particularly if you have a couple of them or a gaggle of them.
Sure.
But I've never been one to, there's 2 things I don't, I'll just go ahead and piggyback off of your gripes. Okay. So you don't like it when someone says that parenting is hard.
It's the hardest thing you've ever done.
I mean, I don't think it's easy, but I see where you're coming from. More so for me is the I'm tired.
Yes.
I cannot stand it when people tell me they're tired.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care that you're tired.
Yeah. A lot of people are tired.
Yeah. Everybody's tired.
Yeah.
And if you're not tired, and it's important to you to not be tired, rectify it.
Yeah, there's some dude out there right now working like a 16-hour like day to make ends meet. Oh. That dude's more tired than I ever was I was like putting DVDs in for my kids or putting my son in his little swing-a-ma-jig and like dangling something in front of him so that he would stop crying for a bit.
I'm just so tired. Oh, shut up.
Yeah, I don't.
The other one.
I don't know how I do it.
The other one for me is it's a kind of a little pet peeve. It's the idea that I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
You do. You just don't prioritize it.
If you,
I get it. Kids are time consuming, and that probably means not a lot of golf if you want to be a good dad.
Yes.
That makes total sense. But if you're saying, like you were saying maybe yesterday, or maybe it was somebody else that was saying, you know, it's not that hard to squeeze in 30 minutes for a college football video game. Now, it's not my thing, but if somebody really wants to do it, you know, in between, you know, two
pretty easy
S-ed kids,
yeah,
you can do it. You just have to prioritize it, much like you prioritize, I don't know, having that cocktail at night or getting up early and going to the gym. It's what matters to you. So this idea that you don't have time for something, I've just never liked that. You do. There's time in the day. It's all about how you allocate that time and what matters to you. So if it matters to you, make time for it.
And to this clown, Vancouver Ford text line, it's amazing how good Suk is at everything. Now he's a super dad.
Yeah.
This is my point.
In your face.
I'm not a super dad. That's my thing, is that if I can do it, trust me, I'm average at best at almost everything I do. The difference is I'm not trying to make myself out to be some sort of martyr because I had to raise kids. I'm so with you on the I'm too busy or I'm too tired. Oh, Schwarzenegger has a great motivational talk about that, about being tired, where he does this one where he's like, people tell me all the time, like, I need my 8 hours sleep. And Schwarzenegger goes, just sleep faster. You don't need 8 hours. Get up and get it done. We all have the same 24 hours in the day. And there's a guy that accomplished a lot in a very, very short period of time. The guy conquered like 9 different things in his life.
And is made.
And is made. Absolutely.
Conquered her, didn't he?
Yeah. And then had a kid.
By the way, no, see, this is where I diverge. I do need my 8 hours. I do think that's important.
And guess what?
I do?
Yeah.
I prioritize it.
Yeah.
I will bag it. I'm out. Yeah. I'm going to bed. I'm tired.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll crawl into bed right after the show. I'm not even kidding.
There you go. I work in agriculture. It's harvest season right now. There you go. That person right there. The average young person doesn't know what tired is. Thank you. Whoever that guy is on the Vancouver Ford text line, to go be a parent and go tell that guy who's working in the fields, go tell that guy that you're tired because you were watching your kid who, by the way, some of the kids aren't even mobile yet. It's like, oh, I'm chasing around a 2-year all day. Cool. You know what? Go work in the field for 12 hours a day. Tell me which one is more tired. Go talk to the raging wildfires that are burning. I promise you, nothing I did as a parent was as hard or as tiring as a smoke jumper right now in Eastern Oregon trying not to get burned to death.
Next time Dan Lanning comes on,
yeah,
I want you to tell him you're tired.
Exactly.
See how that goes. He says.
Hey, Dan, you know what?
I'm just a little tired. We're a little tired today.
A little tired. You know, my kids, you know, they're kind of bugging me lately.
Tired is a choice.
Oh, yeah. I think he's got a whole one holstered for being tired.
Well, there's an impromptu seggy.
Sorry.
It's your fault.
All your fault. I got derailed.
The poll question is next, and then we'll get to Kirby Smart Audio. He's talking about Oregon today at SEC Media Day. But first, let's go to Will with SportsCenter.
This is an Open Championship Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
You know, I hope we elect to kick ass is what I hope we do.
Got a lot of college football coming up here shortly. Did see somebody put the pen to paper and has determined that Florida does have the hardest schedule of all time.
Yeah, Billy Napier will be fired by like week 7.
Ever.
Yeah.
Dabo Swinney, critical again, but perhaps this time he has a point.
Hey, look at Dabo for the first time.
And Kirby Smart. Jealous much?
Hey, turns out that Lanny was onto something who said the grass is pretty green in Eugene.
First, the 1080 The Fan daily poll question. It's on X at 1080 The Fan. Yesterday, we asked you which of this week's events interests you most. The Open Championship got 40% of the vote. followed by EA College Football 25's release, 33%, Major League Baseball All-Star Festivities, 18%, and only 9% of you said NBA Summer League.
The real answer to that, we already went to Dirt, who is the only guy I know who is truly passionate about every one of those things, and he said EA Sports College Football by a mile. So,
well, the listeners voted for the Open, which gets underway tomorrow night.
They're wrong. Dirt had one this morning where he said, if there hadn't been an Open in 14 years, then the Open Championship. But he goes, I get one of those every year. I've been waiting a decade and a half for this.
Today's poll question, it is up there at 1080 The Fan on X. Do you have anything left in your sports feels for All-Star Games? Hell yes. Not really, or never had it. Vote. Vote hard.
I'd say hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
I got some.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's like the most important thing in the world, but I enjoy a good All-Star Game.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean anything, but I enjoy them.
Now, the Major League Baseball All-Star Game is not linked to home field in the World Series like it used to be, right?
No. They did away with that, which might have been like the worst idea. Like, they're constantly trying to make these things relevant. I don't know why they can't just enjoy them for what they are. And if people don't like it, okay. Like, they're not going to ever do giant ratings, but they're all solid. They sell out. It's a big deal. But leagues are constantly like, how do we make this thing count? It doesn't count. And it's not going to count.
Well, I think
just move on with it.
I don't know that leagues are trying to say, how do we make these count? I think they're fighting the battle of these games are stupid. How do we make them less stupid? That's really all it is. Like, the NFL can't figure it out. They're basically to the point, even the NFL figures everything out.
Yeah, they just quit.
And they're basically to the point where this sucks. We're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
Baseball has the best one by far, the most relevant one by far. But even they are like, well, I mean, what can we do?
Yeah.
And then basketball is in a state of disarray.
They're like, kind of where the NFL was.
Yes,
where
they're trying so hard, and it's just none of it's working.
No. Like, I could see the NBA going although the NBA All-Star Weekend is a bigger deal than the Pro Bowl ever was. It's in the middle of the season. It's not the physical nature of the game. Like, you would think of all the sports to get someone to care, the NBA would be the easiest to do, but they're where the NFL was a couple years ago, where they are just desperate to do anything to get people, to get the players to take it even remotely seriously.
I don't know if this is true, but I feel like the NBA has its own little insular sub-community that the other sports don't have.
The players certainly feel like it's more of a tight-knit community. You're
right. It's just this little... Yeah. You're either in it or you're not. And if you're in it, you love everything NBA, and it's about the swag and the social media and all this. And I do feel like NBA All-Star Weekend brings all of those people together.
100%.
So there's value there for that. But at the same time, trying to get old guys like you and I to care, it's just not happening. It's not working.
No, I haven't watched.
It's not working.
I haven't watched an NBA All-Star game to any degree outside of, flipping over to something for 3 minutes does not constitute watching.
Well, you're trying, though, because I do the same.
Yeah.
I try, and I flip over, and NBA, I am instantly, and I mean instantly, reminded of how crappy that game is, and I turn it right back off.
Yes. I have not watched any chunk of a Pro Bowl or an NBA All-Star game 10 years, at least. I always catch part of the MLB game, and I always catch part of the NHL All-Star game. I think those are actually, they do a better job than the other two. But that's why I said, to me, the Pro Bowl and the NBA All-Star game have a very similar feeling, that it's just, it's such bad play because no one's playing any defense. And I get that it lends itself to not play defense. The NFL, no one wants to get hurt, so you can't play a football game and not have it be brutal. Doesn't exist. So that alone, the Pro Bowl will never be relevant. Ever. Because the game cannot be played without injury. Doesn't exist. The NBA could, if people just played any semblance of defense. They just don't. And so it becomes the Pro Bowl. Where there's no line play, there's no defense, no one's getting hit, no one's doing anything, and it just turns into a... How many times can you watch a team run down and jack up like a 35-foot three before you don't care anymore? It's just, it's dumb. It's pointless. Whereas baseball is the most like the actual sport. Like, when you watch the All-Star game, you know, pitchers are out there throwing and, you know, maybe you don't have as aggressive on the base pass or anything, but that's the actual sport. And then in hockey, I just think it's pretty entertaining. They do a lot of different formats and there's so much skill involved. And even though there's not hitting, I still think it ends up being a very entertaining game because in a sport where there's not a ton of scoring, you see something that's abnormal. You do get to see a lot of skill and goals.
Do you have anything left in your sports feels for All-Star games? Hell yes, not really, or never had it. Vote on X at 1080 The Fan. When we get back, hear what Kirby Smart said about Oregon today at SEC Media Day. It is 3:43 on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
You know the KC and the Sunshine Band sing that song? Did you know that?
Yes, I did. And the only thing I think about when I hear that song is the classic Boogie Nights.
Yeah?
Yeah. One of my criminally underrated movies. Love Boogie Nights. It doesn't get its credit because it's about porn, but it is a really, really well-done movie.
No, not to open a can of worms here because I want to get to Kirby Smart Audio.
Yeah.
But
you're about to open a can of worms.
What is the most... What song is most synonymous with a certain movie?
Holiday Road's pretty good. I mean, we play it every day, and I can't think of anything but National Lampoon's when I hear that.
Chariots of Fire.
Chariots of Fire is good. I know it's not a song, but the
Jaws theme?
Do scores matter? Because the Jaws theme...
No, I'm talking about songs by groups or artists.
Because the other one is anything John Williams does. I mean, the Imperial March to the opening credits of Star Wars, Superman, I mean, Indiana Jones, like some of the most recognizable tunes on the planet. But those were made for the movie.
When I hear Dream On, I think of Miracle.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a big enough movie to, like, Footloose is another one. I mean,
that movie sucks.
Yeah, Footloose, that's a good one.
Footloose is good. Danger Zone, Top Gun.
There
is,
you go.
Is probably a phenomenal one for people because that was a giant movie.
Maybe Unchained Melody.
There you go. Unchained Melody is good from Ghost, and then The Time of Your Life. What is the official? The I've Had the Time of My Life. Is that the actual name of the song? The Dirty Dancing.
Yes.
I think it's Time of My Life. The last song from Dirty Dancing.
I know what you're talking about.
I mean, they did a whole Crazy Stupid Love did a whole movie based around that song and the doing the Dirty Dancing lift. I mean, that's I've Had the Time of My Life. That one may be number one for me.
Stand By Me.
Stand By Me is a good one. Yeah.
All right. Well, now to college football.
And for something completely different.
Yeah. Kirby Smart is the coach at Georgia. Now, last I checked, Georgia and Oregon were both in the top five this year. And some have Georgia 1, Oregon 2.
Yeah.
So.
Both are one of the few teams that could win the whole thing.
Probably don't need to say this, but just in case somebody out there is, you know, just a casual sportser.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Lanning coached under Kirby Smart.
Yes.
He was the defensive coordinator on one of those championship teams.
They know each other well.
So Kirby was out at SEC Media Day with his old ill-fitting suit. And
yeah, can we just get like a, I mean, God, you make like $12 million a year. Can you get a tailor?
Yeah, I don't think he cares.
No, it's true.
And he probably doesn't, well, how often do you think Kirby Smart wears a suit? Because I don't think it's as much as you would think.
Probably not. But, you know, things like this, or I'm sure it's some booster. And
he probably didn't even need to wear a suit to this.
Probably not.
But he did.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like he hadn't bought a suit in 20 years. but that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, priorities.
Sure.
So Kerbs was out there and took a little shot at Oregon.
I don't know if it was necessarily a shot. I think it was more of a... I think, like, Saban did this when he was talking about A&M. I think Kirby... Yeah, it's a little shot at Oregon, but I think more it's a shot at his boosters.
This year we took Nike, who I've had the great pleasure of meeting Phil Knight and his wonderful wife Penny, and I wish I could get some of that NIL money that he's sharing with Dan Lanning, but that's another note.
You lost me there in the beginning. You said my NIL what?
The joke about Nike and Dan Lanning.
Dan Lanning having the treasure chest to open up and get whatever he wants. Yeah, but what was your question?
So there you go. Short and sweet, but a couple references to Dan Lanning's treasure chest there.
There's no way to confirm this because there's a list that tracks these that has Oregon at 19, which is absurd.
Yeah, but when Kirby Smart's saying it,
yes,
come on, man.
So I mean, we have someone that's very tied into the recruiting world. I've tried to talk to people to kind of get an idea of this. The worst that I've heard about Oregon's NIL is the following. Oregon has never lost a kid because of NIL money. And that is the lowest bar. And then the other is Oregon will outspend everybody. And then, of course, Rick Neuheisel came out and said that there's an unlimited amount of funds. Unlimited it's somewhat misleading because Oregon's not giving every kid $10 million. But while most places have a cap, and year to year they're having to raise a certain amount of money, Oregon is running there. Division Street, I think, is their NIL collective. They're running it more like a sustainable business that keeps generating money every year, and there isn't a budget. Oregon has whatever they need to go after a player. Hence, they will never get outspent on a kid. Now, that doesn't mean that you can buy every kid. In fact, the receiver that just committed,
About Moore from Duncanville?
Yeah, the wide receiver, the five-star receiver. You can take it for what it's worth, but his mom said that Texas offered them more money, and that's not the only reason that they came here. I guarantee that Oregon was very much in the ballpark on that. So, yes, NIL is something that has absolutely leveled the playing field for Oregon, and they will not be outspent. And, yes, they are probably offering significantly more than probably 99% of the schools out there, but it's not the only reason. Otherwise, A&M would also have a phenomenal recruiting class every single year. And so I think it's a little cheap to say that the only reason they're having this recruiting success is because of NIL. They have hammer recruiters, and they have a lot of flash and sizzle because of Nike, and then it's backed by essentially an unlimited war chest. You put all of those things together, you've got a juggernaut. And we all know that years ago, 20-plus years ago, Phil got together in a room and asked everyone affiliated with Oregon, what do I have to do to make this a championship-level program? And that started what we now know is this modern run of Oregon football. And if you don't think it, 86, 87 years old, that dude ain't shifting it into high gears to win one before he goes, you're fooling yourself. But you're also doing a disservice if you think that's the only reason Oregon's successful.
Well, when the Georgia coach is commenting on it, it's clearly a thing.
Yes.
Which I think is great.
Yeah.
But also, they are buddies. You know, Dan Lanning and Kirby Smart.
Yes. So there's probably a little...
There's a little jabbing going on there. Because remember, Kirby Smart was the one who said, after Georgia beat the crap out of them in Lanning's first game, he said, we just have better players.
Yeah. And he said, give it time. And, you know, you don't think that when Kirby hears about the resources that Lanning had. You don't think when they run into each other that he doesn't poke him in the ribs a little bit? Of course he does.
Well, I do think it's, you know, and I don't know the ins and outs of it in terms of the dollar figures, but come on. I mean, I think it's one thing if it's the Oregon State coach saying that. You're the coach at Georgia, dude. You've won two titles. Two? Three. Two.
Two.
You've won two titles.
You went back-to-back and then lost the opportunity to go for three.
You're a big boy in the SEC. You've got everything you need to dominate in college football. So it's a little, you know, coming from him, it's like, dude, shut up.
Yep.
Come on, man.
Well, and for years, the SEC and the programs like Georgia and Alabama, they had a giant advantage on everyone else, from facilities to booster money to the ability to play dirty, all of those things, recruiting grounds. I never once heard anyone from the SEC being like, you know, we may be great, but we have a lot of advantages that someone else doesn't have. And now all of a sudden, for the first time, maybe ever, there's a little school out west that has an advantage. Let's be honest. Nike and Phil give Oregon an advantage over every other school in the country. It doesn't mean that advantage is greater than the advantage of having fertile recruiting grounds and the SEC and the Georgia brand and all that. But for the first time, Oregon has something that Georgia and Bama don't. And I love the fact now, after 100 years of being in the catbird seat, someone has one advantage of you, and all of a sudden it's like, well, I don't like this.
Well, Saban was the king of that.
Yes.
Anytime he saw something that was shifting things away out of his favor, he would always comment on it and be like, well, I don't like that.
Yeah, the spread offense and, you know, all this. And so, yeah, it's a big eye roll for me. But there is truth in that for the first time, and it's kind of crazy to think about it, for the first time, there is a school on the West Coast, and it's not named USC, it's not UW, that have a leg up on the rest of the competition.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, this is going to become a thing if Oregon wins a bunch of games.
God, yeah.
And this, just remember that it is an absurd notion that Oregon bought and didn't build a football winner.
Yeah,
that is an absurd notion. Yes. And you're going to hear that if Oregon starts winning, or God forbid wins a title, or, you know, over the next 5 years, they just really, really, really good, even better than they have been. We can't fall into the trap of they just bought this and didn't build it, because if you say that, that is the most short-sighted thing ever. You have not been paying attention to the last 30 years of that program.
Mm-hmm. Well, and can I also ask Alabama, who's won, how many did Bear win? Did Bear win?
Six.
Saban's got six or seven on his own. So however many national titles Alabama has, and there's a lot, can we say that they bought it? Because they just had more resources. They built a 90,000-seat stadium. They paid for players. They had a passionate fan base, and they had all of their resources that they had that very few schools had, and they dumped it into their program. Oregon now has a bunch of resources they're dumping into a program. So I don't understand how you can say Auburn bought their national title with Cam Newton, literally bought him, and we know how much they paid for him. You know, it's like if you think that Alabama and Georgia just had all these players come to those schools out of the goodness of their heart, I don't know what to tell you other than I've got some oceanfront property in the middle of Kansas that I'd love to sell you. It's just that now that it's on the up and up, and that you've got someone that's got more resources than you, because you've got a guy that's worth billions that wants to see his team win. I don't know. I think it's very, the hypocrisy knows no bounds when you're talking about, quote, buying a national championship. All right, by the way, they still haven't won anything.
Up next, Dabo Swinney is wary of the expanded college football playoff, and we'll tell you why next on The Fan. Kirby Smart Audio, he's talking about Oregon today at SEC Media Day. But first, let's go to Will with SportsCenter.
This is an Open Championship Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
Now, I hope we elect to kick ass is what I hope we do.
Got a lot of college football coming up here shortly. Did see somebody put the pen to paper and has determined that Florida does have the hardest schedule of all time.
Yeah, Billy Napier will be fired by like week seven.
Ever.
Yeah.
Dabo Swinney, critical again, but perhaps this time he has a point.
Hey, look at Dabo for the first time.
And Kirby Smart. Jealous much?
Hey, turns out that Lanny was onto something who said the grass is pretty green in Eugene.
First, the 1080 The Fan daily poll question. It's on X at 1080 The Fan. Yesterday, we asked you which of this week's events interests you most. The Open Championship got 40% of the vote, followed by EA College Football 25's release, 33%. Major League Baseball All-Star Festivities, 18%. And only 9% of you said NBA Summer League.
The real answer to that, we already went to Dirt, who is the only guy I know who is truly passionate about every one of those things, and he said EA Sports College Football by a mile. So,
well, the listeners voted for the Open, which gets underway tomorrow night.
They're wrong. Dirt had one this morning where he said, if there hadn't been an Open in 14 years, then the Open Championship. But he goes, I get one of those every year. I've been waiting a decade and a half for this.
Today's poll question, it is up there at 1080 The Fan on X. Do you have anything left in your sports feels for All-Star games? Hell yes. Not really, or never had it. Vote. Vote hard.
I'd say hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
I got some.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's like the most important thing in the world, but I enjoy a good All-Star game.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean anything, but I enjoy them.
Now, the Major League Baseball All-Star game is not linked to home field in the World Series like it used to be, right?
No. No. They did away with that. Which might have been like the worst idea. Like, they're constantly trying to make these things relevant. I don't know why they can't just enjoy them for what they are. And if people don't like it, okay. Like, they're not going to ever do giant ratings, but they're all solid. They sell out. It's a big deal. But leagues are constantly like, how do we make this thing count? It doesn't count. And it's not going to count.
Well, I think
just move on with it.
I don't know that leagues are trying to say, how do we make these count? I think they're fighting the battle of, these games are stupid. How do we make them less stupid? That's really all it is. Like, the NFL can't figure it out. They're basically to the point, even the NFL figures everything out.
Yeah, they just quit.
And they're basically to the point where, this sucks, we're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
Baseball has the best one by far, the most relevant one by far. But even they are like, well, I mean, what can we do?
Yeah.
And then basketball is in a state of disarray.
They're like, kind of where the NFL was,
yes,
where
they're trying so hard, and it's just none of it's working.
No, like, I could see the NBA going although the NBA All-Star Weekend is a bigger deal than the Pro Bowl ever was. It's in the middle of the season. It's not the physical nature of the game. Like, you would think of all the sports to get someone to care, the NBA would be the easiest to do, but they're where the NFL was a couple years ago, where they are just desperate to do anything to get people, to get the players to take it even remotely seriously.
I don't know if this is true, but I feel like the NBA has its own little insular sub-community that the other sports don't have.
Well, the players certainly feel like it's more of a tight-knit community. You're
right. It's just this little... Yeah. You're either in it or you're not, and if you're in it, you love everything NBA, and it's about the swag and the social media and all this. And I do feel like NBA All-Star Weekend brings all of those people together.
100%.
So there's value there for that, but at the same time, trying to get old guys like you and I to care, it's just not happening. It's not working.
No, I haven't watched...
It's not working.
I haven't watched an NBA All-Star game to any degree outside of, you know, like the, you know, flipping over to something for 3 minutes does not constitute watching.
Well, you're trying though, because I do the same.
Yeah.
I try and I flip over and NBA, I am instantly, and I mean instantly, reminded of how crappy that game is, and I turn it right back on.
Yes. I have not watched any chunk of a Pro Bowl or an NBA All-Star game 10 years at least. I always catch part of the MLB game, and I always catch part of the NHL All-Star game. I think those are actually, they do a better job than the other two. But that's why I said, to me, the Pro Bowl and the NBA All-Star game have a very similar feel, in that it's just, it's such bad play because no one's playing any defense. And I get that it lends itself to not play defense. The NFL, no one wants to get hurt, so you can't play a football game and not have it be brutal. Doesn't exist. So that alone, the Pro Bowl will never be relevant. Ever. Because the game cannot be played without injury. Doesn't exist. The NBA could, if people just played any semblance of defense. They just don't. And so it becomes the Pro Bowl, where there's no line play, there's no defense, no one's getting hit, no one's doing anything, and it just turns into a... How many times can you watch a team run down and jack up like a 35-foot three before you don't care anymore? It's just, it's dumb. It's pointless. Whereas baseball is the most like the actual sport. Like, when you watch the All-Star game, you know, pitchers are out there throwing, and, you know, maybe you don't have as aggressive on the base pass or anything, but that's the actual sport. And then in hockey, I just think it's pretty entertaining. They do a lot of different formats, and there's so much skill involved. And even though there's not hitting, I still think it ends up being a very entertaining game, because in a sport where there's not a ton of scoring, you see something that's abnormal. You do get to see a lot of skill and goals.
Do you have anything left in your sports feels for All-Star games? Hell yes, not really, or never had it. Vote on X at 1080 The Fan. When we get back, hear what Kirby Smart said about Oregon today at SEC Media Day. It is 3:43 on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
You know the KC and the Sunshine Band sang that song? Did you know that?
Yes, I did. And the only thing I think about when I hear that song is the classic Boogie Nights.
Yeah?
Yeah. One of my criminally underrated movies. Love Boogie Nights. It doesn't get its credit because it's about porn, but it is a really, really well done movie.
No, not to open a can of worms here because I want to get to Kirby Smart Audio.
Yeah.
But
you're about to open a can of worms.
What is the most? What song is most synonymous with a certain movie?
Holiday Road's pretty good. I mean, we play it every day, and I can't think of anything but National Lampoon's when I hear that.
Chariots of Fire.
Chariots of Fire is good. I know it's not a song, but the
Jaws theme.
Do scores matter? Because the Jaws theme.
No, I'm talking about songs by groups or artists.
Because the other one is anything John Williams does. I mean, the Imperial March to the opening credits of Star Wars, Superman. I mean, Indiana Jones. Like some of the most recognizable tunes on the planet. But those were made for the movie.
When I hear Dream On, I think of Miracle.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a big enough movie to, like, Footloose is another one. I mean,
that movie sucks.
Yeah, Footloose, that's a good one.
Footloose is good. Danger Zone, Top Gun is probably a phenomenal one for people because that was a giant movie.
Maybe Unchained Melody.
There you go. Unchained Melody is good from Ghost, and then The Time of Your Life. What is the official, the I've Had the Time of My Life? Is that the actual name of the song? The Dirty Dancing.
Yes.
I think it's Time of My Life. The last song from Dirty Dancing.
I know what you're talking about.
I mean, they did a whole Crazy Stupid Love did a whole movie based around that song and the doing the Dirty Dancing lift. I mean, that's I've Had the Time of My Life. That one may be number one for me.
Stand By Me.
Stand By Me is a good one. Yeah.
All right. Well, now to college football.
And for something completely different.
Yeah. Kirby Smart is the coach at Georgia. Now, last I checked, Georgia and Oregon were both in the top five this year. And some have Georgia 1, Oregon 2.
Yeah.
So.
Both are one of the few teams that could win the whole thing.
Probably don't need to say this, but just in case somebody out there is, you know, just a casual sportser.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Lanning coached under Kirby Smart.
Yes.
He was the defensive coordinator on one of those championship teams.
They know each other well.
So Kirby was out at SEC Media Day with his old ill-fitting suit. And
yeah, can we just get like a, I mean, God, you make like $12 million a year. Can you get a tailor?
Yeah, I don't think he cares.
No, it's true.
And he probably doesn't, well, how often do you think Kirby Smart wears a suit? Because I don't think it's as much as you would think.
Probably not, but you know, things like this, or I'm sure it's some booster. And
he probably didn't even need to wear a suit to this.
Probably not,
but he did, and it looked like he hadn't bought a suit in 20 years. but that's okay.
Yeah,
you know, priorities.
Sure.
So Kerbs was out there and took a little shot at Oregon.
I don't know if it was necessarily a shot. I think it was more of a. I think like Saban did this when he was talking about A&M. I think Kirby, yeah, it's a little shot at Oregon, but I think more it's a shot at his boosters.
This year we took Nike, who I've had the great pleasure of meeting Phil Knight and his wonderful wife Penny, and I wish I could get some of that NIL money that he's sharing with Dan Lanning, but that's another note.
You lost me there in the beginning. You said my NIL what?
The joke about Nike and Dan Lanning.
Dan Lanning having the treasure chest to open up and get whatever he wants. Yeah, but what was your question?
So there you go. Short and sweet, but a couple references to Dan Lanning's treasure chest there.
There's no way to confirm this because like there's a list that tracks these that has Oregon at 19, which is absurd.
Yeah, but when Kirby Smart's saying it,
yes,
come on, man.
So I mean, we have someone that's very tied into the recruiting world. I've tried to talk to people to kind of get an idea of this. The worst that I've heard. about Oregon's NIL is the following. No one, what was it? Oregon has never lost a kid because of NIL money. And that is the lowest bar. And then the other is Oregon will outspend everybody. And then, of course, Rick Neuheisel came out and said that there's an unlimited amount of funds. Unlimited is I mean, it's somewhat misleading because Oregon's not giving every kid $10 million. But while most places have a cap, and year to year they're having to raise a certain amount of money, Oregon is running their, I think, is it Division Street, I think, is their NIL collective. They're running it more like a sustainable business that keeps generating money every year, and there isn't a budget. Oregon has whatever they need to go after a player. Hence, they will never get outspent on a kid. Now, that doesn't mean that you can buy every kid. In fact, the receiver that just committed,
About Moore from Duncanville?
Yeah, the wide receiver, the five-star receiver. You can take it for what it's worth, but his mom said that Texas offered them more money, and that's not the only reason that they came here. I guarantee that Oregon was very much in the ballpark on that. So, yes, NIL is something that has absolutely leveled the playing field for Oregon, and they will not be outspent. And, yes, they are probably offering significantly more than probably 99% of the schools out there, but it's not the only reason. Otherwise, A&M would also have a phenomenal recruiting class every single year. And so I think it's a little cheap to say that the only reason they're having this recruiting success is because of NIL. They have hammer recruiters, and they have a lot of flash and sizzle because of Nike, and then it's backed by essentially an unlimited war chest. You put all of those things together, you've got a juggernaut. And we all know that years ago, 20-plus years ago, Phil got together in a room and asked everyone affiliated with Oregon, what do I have to do to make this a championship-level program? And that started what we now know is this modern run of Oregon football. And if you don't think at, 86, 87 years old, that dude ain't shifting it into high gears to win one before he goes, you're fooling yourself. But you're also doing a disservice if you think that's the only reason Oregon's successful.
Well, when the Georgia coach is commenting on it,
yeah,
it's clearly a thing.
Yes.
Which I think is great.
Yeah.
But also, they are buddy. You know, Dan Lanning and Kirby Smart.
Yes. So there's probably a little...
There's a little jabbing going on there. Because remember, Kirby Smart was the one who said, after Georgia beat the crap out of them,
yeah,
in Lanning's first game, he said, we just have better players.
Yeah. And he said, give it time. And, you know, you don't think that when Kirby hears about the resources that Lanning had, you don't think when they run into each other that he doesn't poke him in the ribs a little bit? Of course he does.
Well, I do think it's, you know, and I don't know the ins and outs of it in terms of the dollar figures, but come on. I mean, I think it's one thing if it's the Oregon State coach,
yes,
saying that. You're the coach at Georgia, dude. You've won two titles. Two? Three. Two.
Two.
You've won two titles.
He went back-to-back and then lost the opportunity to go for three.
You're a big boy in the SEC. You've got everything you need,
yep,
to dominate in college football. So it's a little, you know, coming from him, exactly, it's like, dude, shut up.
Yep.
Come on, man.
Well, and for years, the SEC and the programs like Georgia and Alabama, they had a giant advantage on everyone else, from facilities to booster money to the ability to play dirty, all of those things, recruiting grounds. I never once heard anyone from the SEC being like, you know, we may be great, but we have a lot of advantages that someone else doesn't have. And now all of a sudden, for the first time, maybe ever, there's a little school out west that has an advantage. Let's be honest, Nike and Phil give Oregon an advantage over every other school in the country. It doesn't mean that advantage is greater than the advantage of having fertile recruiting grounds and the SEC and the Georgia brand and all that. But for the first time, Oregon has something that Georgia and Bama don't. And I love the fact now, after 100 years of being in the catbird seat, someone has one advantage of you, and all of a sudden it's like, well, I don't like this.
Well, Saban was the king of that.
Yes.
Anytime he saw something that was shifting things away out of his favor,
yeah,
he would always comment on it and be, yeah, like, well, I don't like that.
Yeah, the spread offense and, you know, all this. And so, yeah, this but, all, I just, it's a big eye roll for me. But there is truth in that for the first time, and it's kind of crazy to think about it, for the first time, there is a school on the West Coast, and it's not named USC, it's not UW, that have a leg up on the rest of the competition.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, this is going to become a thing if Oregon wins a bunch of games.
God, yeah.
And this, just remember that it is an absurd notion that Oregon bought and didn't build a football winner.
Yeah.
That is an absurd notion. Yes. And you're going to hear that. If Oregon starts winning, or God forbid wins a title, or, you know, over the next 5 years, they just really, really, really good, even better than they have been. We can't fall into the trap of they just bought this and didn't build it, because if you say that, that is the most short-sighted thing ever. You have not been paying attention to the last 30 years of that program.
Mm-hmm. Well, and can I also ask, Alabama, who's won, how many did Bear win? Did Bear win?
Six.
Six. Saban's got six or seven on his own. So however many national titles Alabama has, and there's a lot. Can we say that they bought it because they just had more resources? They built a 90,000 seat stadium. They paid for players. They had a passionate fan base, and they had all of their resources that they had that very few schools had, and they dumped it into their program. Oregon now has a bunch of resources they're dumping into a program. So I don't understand how you can say Auburn bought their national title with Cam Newton, literally bought him. And we know how much they paid for him. You know, it's like, if you think that Alabama and Georgia just had all these players come to those schools out of the goodness of their heart, I don't know what to tell you other than I've got some oceanfront property in the middle of Kansas that I'd love to sell you. It's just that now that it's on the up and up, and that you've got someone that's got more resources than you, because you've got a guy that's worth billions that wants to see his team win. I don't know. I think it's very... The hypocrisy knows no bounds when you're talking about, quote, buying a national championship. By the way, they still haven't won anything.
Up next, Dabo Swinney is wary of the expanded college football playoff, and we'll tell you why. Next on The Fan. Three on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club.
On 1080 The Fan.
You know the KC and the Sunshine Band sing that song? Did you know that?
Yes, I did. And the only thing I think about when I hear that song is the classic Boogie Nights.
Yeah?
Yeah. One of my criminally underrated movies. Love Boogie Nights. And it doesn't get its credit because it's about porn, but it is a really, really well-done movie.
No, not to open a can of worms here, because I want to get to Kirby Smart Audio.
Yeah.
But
you're about to open a can of worms.
What is the most? What song is most synonymous with a certain movie?
Holiday Road's pretty good. I mean, we play it every day, and I can't think of anything but National Lampoon's when I hear that.
Chariots of Fire.
Chariots of Fire is good. I know it's not a song, but the
Jaws theme.
Do scores matter? Because the Jaws theme.
No, I'm talking about songs by groups or artists.
Because the other one is anything John Williams does. I mean, the Imperial March to the opening credits of Star Wars, Superman. I mean, Indiana Jones. Like some of the most recognizable tunes on the planet. But those were made for the movie.
When I hear Dream On, I think of Miracle.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a big enough movie to, like, Footloose is another one. I mean,
that movie sucks.
Yeah, Footloose, that's a good one.
Footloose is good. Danger Zone, Top Gun.
There
is,
you go.
Is probably a phenomenal one for people because that was a giant movie.
Maybe Unchained Melody.
There you go. Unchained Melody is good from Ghost, and then The Time of Your Life. What is the official, I've Had the Time of My Life. Is that the actual name of the song? The Dirty Dancing.
Yes.
I think it's Time of My Life. The last song from Dirty Dancing.
I know what you're talking about.
I mean, they did a whole Crazy Stupid Love did a whole movie based around that song and the doing the Dirty Dancing lift. I mean, that's I've Had the Time of My Life. That one may be number one for me.
Stand by Me.
Stand by Me is a good one. Yeah.
All right. Well, now to college football.
and for something completely different.
Yeah, Kirby Smart is the coach at Georgia. Now, last I checked, Georgia and Oregon were both in the top five this year, and some have Georgia 1, Oregon 2.
Yeah.
So
both are one of the few teams that could win the whole thing.
Probably don't need to say this, but just in case somebody out there is, you know, just a casual sportser, Dan Lanning coached under Kirby Smart.
Yes.
He was the defensive coordinator on one of those championship teams.
They know each other well.
So Kirby was out at SEC Media Day with his old ill-fitting suit. And
yeah, can we just get like a, I mean, God, you make like $12 million a year. Can you get a tailor?
Yeah, I don't think he cares.
No, it's true.
And he probably doesn't, well, how often do you think Kirby Smart wears a suit? Because I don't think it's as much as you would think.
Probably not, but you know, things like this, or I'm sure it's some booster. And
he probably didn't even need to wear a suit to this.
Probably not,
but he did, and it looked like he hadn't bought a suit in 20 years. but that's okay.
Yeah,
you know, priorities.
Sure.
So Kerbs was out there and took a little shot at Oregon.
I don't know if it was necessarily a shot. I think it was more of a, I think like Saban did this when he was talking about A&M. I think Kirby, yeah, it's a little shot at Oregon, but I think more it's a shot at his boosters.
This year we took Nike, who I've had the great pleasure of meeting Phil Knight and his wonderful wife Penny, and I wish I could get some of that NIL money that he's sharing with Dan Lanning, but that's another note.
You lost me there in the beginning. You said my NIL what?
The joke about Nike and Dan Lanning.
Oh, yeah, about Dan Lanning having the treasure chest to open up and get whatever he wants. Yeah, but what was your question?
So there you go. Short and sweet, but a couple references to Dan Lanning's treasure chest there.
There's no way to confirm this because there's a list that tracks these that has Oregon at 19, which is absurd.
Yeah, but when Kirby Smart's saying it,
yes,
come on, man.
So I mean, we have someone that's very tied into the recruiting world. I've tried to talk to people to kind of get an idea of this. The worst that I've heard about Oregon's NIL is the following. Oregon has never lost a kid because of NIL money. And that is the lowest bar. And then the other is Oregon will outspend everybody. And then of course, Rick Neuheisel came out and said that there's an unlimited amount of funds. Unlimited is somewhat misleading because Oregon's not giving every kid $10 million. But while most places have a cap, and year to year they're having to raise a certain amount of money, Oregon is running there. Division Street, I think, is their NIL collective. They're running it more like a sustainable business that keeps generating money every year, and there isn't a budget. Oregon has whatever they need to go after a player. Hence, they will never get outspent on a kid. Now, that doesn't mean that you can buy every kid. In fact, the receiver that just committed,
About Moore from Duncanville?
Yeah, the wide receiver, the five-star receiver. You can take it for what it's worth, but his mom said that Texas offered them more money, and that's not the only reason that they came here. I guarantee that Oregon was very much in the ballpark on that. So, yes, NIL is something that has absolutely leveled the playing field for Oregon, and they will not be outspent. And, yes, they are probably offering significantly more than probably 99% of the schools out there, but it's not the only reason. Otherwise, A&M would also have a phenomenal recruiting class every single year. And so I think it's a little cheap to say that the only reason they're having this recruiting success is because of NIL. They have hammer recruiters, and they have a lot of flash and sizzle because of Nike, and then it's backed by essentially an unlimited war chest. You put all of those things together, you've got a juggernaut. And we all know that years ago, 20-plus years ago, Phil got together in a room and asked everyone affiliated with Oregon, what do I have to do to make this a championship-level program? And that started what we now know is this modern run of Oregon football. And if you don't think at, 86, 87 years old, that dude ain't shifting it into high gears to win one before he goes, you're fooling yourself. But you're also doing a disservice if you think that's the only reason Oregon's successful.
Well, when the Georgia coach is commenting on it,
yeah,
it's clearly a thing.
Yes.
Which I think is great.
Yeah.
But also, they are buddy. You know, Dan Lanning and Kirby Smart.
Yes. So there's probably a little...
There's a little jabbing going on there. Because remember, Kirby Smart was the one who said, after Georgia beat the crap out of them,
yeah,
in Lanning's first game, he said, we just have better players.
Yeah. And he said, give it time. And, you know, you don't think that when Kirby hears about the resources that Lanning had, you don't think when they run into each other that he doesn't poke him in the ribs a little bit? Of course he does.
Well, I do think it's, you know, and I don't know the ins and outs of it in terms of the dollar figures, but come on. I mean, I think it's one thing if it's the Oregon State coach saying that. You're the coach at Georgia, dude. You've won two titles. Two? Three. Two.
Two.
He's won two titles.
He went back-to-back and then lost the opportunity to go for three.
You're a big boy in the SEC. You've got everything you need to dominate in college football. So it's a little... You know, coming from him, it's like, dude, shut up.
Yep.
Come on, man.
Well, and for years, the SEC and the programs like Georgia and Alabama, they had a giant advantage on everyone else, from facilities to booster money to the ability to play dirty, all of those things, recruiting grounds. I never once heard anyone from the SEC being like, you know, we may be great, but we have a lot of advantages that someone else doesn't have. And now all of a sudden, for the first time, maybe ever, there is a little school out west that has an advantage. Let's be honest. Nike and Phil give Oregon an advantage over every other school in the country. It doesn't mean that advantage is greater than the advantage of having fertile recruiting grounds and the SEC and the Georgia brand and all that. But for the first time, Oregon has something that Georgia and Bama don't. And I love the fact now, after 100 years of being in the catbird seat, someone has one advantage of you, and all of a sudden it's like, well, I don't like this.
Well, Saban was the king of that.
Yes.
Anytime he saw something that was shifting things away out of his favor, he would always comment on it and be like, well, I don't like that.
Yeah, the spread offense and, you know, all this. And so... Yeah, it's a big eye roll for me. But there is truth in that for the first time, and it's kind of crazy to think about it. For the first time, there is a school on the West Coast, and it's not named USC, it's not UW, that have a leg up on the rest of the competition.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, this is going to become a thing if Oregon wins a bunch of games.
God, yeah.
And this, just remember that... It is an absurd notion that Oregon bought and didn't build a football winner.
Yeah.
That is an absurd notion.
Yes.
And you're going to hear that. If Oregon starts winning, or God forbid wins a title, or, you know, over the next 5 years, they just really, really, really good, even better than they have been. We can't fall into the trap of they just bought this and didn't build it. Because if you say that, that is the most short-sighted thing ever. You have not been paying attention to the last 30 years of that program.
Mm-hmm. Well, and can I also ask, Alabama, who's won, how many did Bear win? Did Bear win?
Six.
Six. Saban's got six or seven on his own. So however many national titles Alabama has, and there's a lot. Can we say that they bought it? Because they just had more resources. They built a 90,000 seat stadium. They paid for players. They had a passionate fan base, and they had all of their resources that they had that very few schools had, and they dumped it into their program. Oregon now has a bunch of resources they're dumping into a program. So I don't understand how you can say Auburn bought their national title with Cam Newton, literally bought him. And we know how much they paid for him. You know, it's like, if you think that Alabama and Georgia just had all these players come to those schools out of the goodness of their heart, I don't know what to tell you other than I've got some oceanfront property in the middle of Kansas that I'd love to sell you. It's just that now that it's on the up and up, and that you've got someone that's got more resources than you, because you've got a guy that's worth billions that wants to see his team win. I don't know. I think it's very... The hypocrisy knows no bounds when you're talking about, quote, buying a national championship. By the way, they still haven't won anything.
Up next, Dabo Swinney is wary of the expanded college football playoff, and we'll tell you why next on The Fan.